really see Samson and ourselves in it. And I ask that you would give me clarity of thoughts and a clear tongue to bring it to life. In Jesus' name, amen. We actually talked about the first seven verses of chapter 14 last week, but I'm going to go on and read this and kind of comment on it so that we kind of get up to snuff on it. Chapter 14, Samson went down to Timnah, and at Timnah he saw one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, his parents wanted him to have one of these girls, that a good Jewish girl, but he decided he didn't want that. Then he came up and told his father and mother, "I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." But his father and mother said to him, "Is there not a woman among the daughters of your kinsmen or among all our people that you must go take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me, for she pleases me well." His father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord. Now, when we talked about that, and when that is from the Lord, Samson doesn't know about it. This is comes out of what God is using Samson for. "For he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Then Samson went down with his father and mother to Timnah, and he came to the vineyards of Timnah. Behold, a young lion roared against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion asunder as one tears a kid, and he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. And then he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. And after a while he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion, and honey. He scraped it out into his hands and went on, eating as he went. And he came to his father and mother and gave some to them. And they ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the carcass of the lion." Now, one of the things that we looked at last week is, first off, Samson is a man of the flesh. He is flesh-oriented. He is very much in this world. He never looks past appearances. He misses the stuff that's behind the scenes in terms of his life. And because he's always functioning out of his own flesh, he loses focus spiritually. If you want another story about that, watch Jacob and Esau. Esau was a guy that functioned out of the flesh, and Jacob was a little bit smarter than he was, but that's why he sold all his heritage for a bowl of chili, basically. But that's what Samson does. He loses focus spiritually because he's looking on things with his eyes. He's in terms of appearances and fashion. And I talked about this in terms of our media out there and the signs that they give us in terms of appearance, especially commercials and stuff like that. And there's always this appetite of the old nature that's always coming forth. And you're always fighting this flesh versus spirit part of us. And the external emphasis is all what we hear on TV and everything. And you may be wise enough to see through that, but I guarantee you that most of the people aren't that are out there. Anyway, he comes up, and we stop right here at verses 8 and 9, where he kills the lion. "After a while, he turned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. He scraped it out into his hands and went on, eating as he went, and he came to his father and mother and gave some to them, and they ate, but he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the carcass of the lions." Now, this is a physical picture here, and you don't think about it very much if you're just kind of reading the story. But this has to do with what Samson's covenant is, and he is a Nazarite by birth. His mother made a covenant basically with God. And God said, "This kid and you don't touch the dead things in terms of life, you don't drink any alcohol or anything from the grapes, and you don't get your hair cut, and this is going to be passed on to your son Samson." Well, this is the first strand in this threefold covenant. It's like three ropes wrapped together. And like this is the first one that gets cut by Samson. What he does is he killed this lion a little earlier. When he comes back, the carcass is there and bees have settled into it. And he gets in there and he gets those bees and he gets some of the honey out. He gets honey all over himself. He goes to his parents and he gives his parents some of the honey as well. Now what he's doing is he is breaking the first strand of the Nazarite covenant with God. Now there's a picture here for some of us. And it has to do with the dead things in this life. Do you know there are a lot of enticements in this world? All you have to do is go out there and kind of listen to the commercial, but there's all kinds of things that draw us. There are dead things in this world. In other words, what they do is they may look good and taste good and feel good, but all they're going to do to you is expose you to really death in this life. They're enticing. Now, this honey, well, it tastes good, you know. But Samson, buddy, you're going to be breaking this Nazarite covenant. Now, you have to remember now, he didn't make the covenant with God. His mother did and parents did. But you know what? We live under covenants all the time. In terms of that, and some of this stuff gets passed down through our families and through our traditions and things like that. But he's breaking a covenant because he doesn't seem to care about the covenants and the God part of his parents' life as well. He said, well, just because you have it doesn't mean I have to have it. You know, I grew up in a Christian home. And there was a point in time where I just kind of rejected everything that my parents stood for in terms of their faith and everything. And I just said, just because you got it, I don't think anything about this stuff. Well, he's doing this with his parents' vow and covenant. And he is messing with an unclean animal that is dead and getting the honey right out of that, and it's an unclean thing. That's the first strand up there. Don't eat anything dead or touch anything. Now, what is happening here is up there under the thing, his focus is being lost as to who he is, his identity, and his destiny and purpose in life. His destiny and purpose in life, as given to him by God, through his mother especially, but through his parents, is that he will begin to deliver the Jewish people out from under the Philistines. That's what he was born to do. And the focus is beginning to be lost here. That's his first thing. Now, the picture is this. How do you take this? You got to translate this into your own life experience. What kills you? You need to think about this. There is stuff of this world, and buddy, it tastes good. But when you get involved with it, it will cut your connection with God. I don't know what your stuff is or anything. What kills you? What diminishes you? I like to, what makes you feel small? Worthless? You know, when you start to lose focus on God, what is it? You know, there are a lot of things in this world. They're really basically dead, but they're kind of sweet tasting, and they're good to look at, and we want this stuff. But what happens is that it begins to diminish us, and it begins to make us small, and it can cut our connection with God. You know, you get involved in enough things outside, it just cuts your connection. I lived down in Kentucky. One of the things we had down in Kentucky is subsidence. The town I lived in was undermined. Coal mines were all over the place. And what they do is they would, when they cut that coal out, it's 6 to 8 feet tall. Most of the time, some of it is as little as 3 or 4 feet, but they would leave pillars in there so that the ground wouldn't sink down. Well, Kentucky people have an idea. We don't need sewers. So what they would do is they'd just punch a hole down to the ground, and they would get down into these coal mines underneath, and they would use them as their toilets. Basically, they would use them as their sewers. Well, the problem with that was that as that stuff goes down here, it started eating the pillars out of the coal. Because coal is basically carbon, and you got all kinds of things down there, and it would eat them, and subsidence would occur, and that's when they would have these pillars, and the pillars would begin to disintegrate, and the ground would drop 3 to 6 feet or more. And if you got a house that's sitting on that, and the ground starts to sink like that, you're undermined, and your foundation gets broken down and everything. There's one place down there near Madisonville, Kentucky. You go down this road, and it's real straight, and it's running real good. Then suddenly, you're on a roller coaster because the highway is going like this. And all it is undermining, and the highway would sink. And then they would redo it, and by God, it'd do it again. It'd just sink right down. And it's undermining. Well, that's the stuff that happens here. Basically, what is happening to Samson is his covenant with God, which is what his destiny is being undermined. And he's doing it himself. He's the one that got the honey out of there. He takes it to his parents. Now, you could call this the evil part if you want to, because he enlists his parents, unknowing to them, that this honey came from a dead creature. And so they begin to have things broken down in them. But you got to think about your own life. When you get out there, what is it that can diminish you, make you feel small, cut your connection with God? Because it's different from all of us. But his focus is being lost. But when you get involved in some things in this life, you begin to lose your focus in terms of your God connection. And your destiny also gets undermined, because every one of us who named Jesus as our Savior and we're in that process of making Him Lord of our life, God has a plan for your life, and it unfolds as He gives it to you, but your destiny can be undermined by the fact that you start messing with the dead things of this world and this life. It's the things of the flesh. Now, it's different for each of us. You know, for one person, it might be the zeal for money. Because money basically is a dead thing in this world. But it tastes good. It feels good if you got it. And what it does is it'll get you off your connection with God. If that happens to be the thing that is yours, it could be property. It could have to do with how much stuff you have. It could be some of the stuff that you have. And it begins to draw you away from God. It may be that, oh, this house is so much more important than God. This house or this car. I really like this car. It could be your kids, where you focus on your children rather than you focus on your relationship with God, and the fact that you're called to be a parent to your children and you are a steward of them during the time that they're growing up, but they become your God, and they're of this world. It might have to do with fashion, or it has to do with ambition. For somebody, you know, we could also talk about drugs and alcohol. They will diminish you. They will make you feel small. Those are things that we know about and we talk about a lot, but some of these other things taste pretty good. They make us feel good, but it cuts your connection with God. So this is what is happening to him, and this is that first strand. Hey, it's not a big deal, right? For somebody else, getting honey out of this lion would not be a big deal. But for him, it was a big deal. I know this, that every one of us here has our own little universe that we live in. And you are the star of your world. And I know this, we all make deals with God. We also have our particular things that we talk to God about. And what might be okay for me to do might not be okay for you. Because it might have to do with your relationship with God and some kind of covenant that has taken place in terms of your life. But all I know is in Samson's case, and he's not the one that made the covenant. His parents did it. But it has to do with his life and destiny. One of those things is don't mess with things that are dead. And that's what he does. And it's just a physical picture of a spiritual reality here that's taking place. And so he does that in verses 8 and 9. Verses 10 to 13 here. And his father went down to the woman, and Samson made a feast there, for so the young men used to do. And when the people saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said to him, "Let me now put a riddle to you. If you can tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast, and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 festal garments. But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 festal garments." And they said to him, "Put your riddle that we may hear it." Now, what's going on here? Well, he gets this gal, and he's going to have, it's basically, I think it's a bachelor's party or something, but they're going to have a feast for 7 days. Let me tell you what, they're throwing a party, okay? How many of you think it's just Diet Coke? Maybe with a little Bacardi added to it or something. They're throwing a feast and he gets all these drinking buddies together and they're good. It doesn't say it, but I know doggone well that's what's going on here. And I can't imagine just being a bunch of Southern Baptists with no alcohol. I just can't buy into that picture. But here's the second thing. The second thing that has to do with the Nazarite covenant that is part of who Samson is no alcohol. Now, hey, it's fine for those 30 guys that show up there. They're not under the same covenant with God. They don't have that same relationship with God. They don't have the exact same kind of thing going on in terms of their life. But for Samson, this has to do with his life meaning and destiny. He's not supposed to have any alcohol. This is the second leg of the covenant and the vow that was taken. And you go up there. What's happening there? Focus is being lost. Things are undermining. His destiny is being undermined by what this thing is doing. Now, you know, this picture works for us. I don't know your life and you don't know mine. You haven't walked where I've walked. You don't know the kinds of things that I talk to God about. There are some general things that we all do, but you know, there are specifics that have to do with my life and my relationship with God, and I expect that there are specific things that have to do with your life and your relationship with God. What kind of vows and covenants have you made? I've heard people at closings for the great banquet stand up there, and I'm listening to them, and they're making vows and covenants before people and God, and I'm going, "Oh, my God. Are you sure you want to say these things?" Because you know what? God's a deal maker. And you start making deals with God, I suggest you stick to your side of the deal. But a lot of people don't do it. You know, if you want to read something in Ecclesiastes, it's one of these scriptures that just kind of jumped out at me when I was reading the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's in chapter 4 or 5. Let me see if I can find it here. Chapter 5, verses 1 to 5, I think. Ecclesiastes. I don't know what kind of commitments you've made to God, but I do know this. This scripture talks about these. It says, "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God to draw near to listen. It is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools." You know what the sacrifice of fools is? That's where you start running at the mouth. "Well, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do this, that for God. And And this is what I'm going to make. And that's the sacrifice of fools. And it goes on, for they do not know that they are doing evil. What they're doing is they're saying things before God that they may not have any intention of following through on. Verse 2, be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven, and you upon earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words. When you vow a vow to God, this is verse 4, do not delay paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? And basically, I've heard people say, I happen to be, you might say, kind of like the messenger in this. It says, people start spouting off things and they make vows and covenants about what they're going to do before God. And I'm going, are you sure you want to say that? And if you do, you better go on and carry on through it. You know, I do marriages. Marriage? I know this. They may think of it as flippant, but I know that when they stand before me, I'm the messenger. And they make a vow and covenant before God in that marriage. I suggest you follow through on it, because if you don't, then you're doing what God says not to do. And that's a vow and covenant. You know, what kind of deals have you made with God over the years? What kind of understandings have you come to understand in the silence of your soul? You know, we all make these kind of deals with God. You know, he has a vow and covenant that takes place here. He's not supposed to have any alcohol. You know, when you fly a kite, the reason that kite can fly is because of the wind that is blowing it, but it also can fly because it's tethered to the ground in some form or fashion. And the tethering to the ground is like this vow and covenant that Samson has, and maybe you have in terms of your life. And if you break that tethered string or whatever that's holding that kite just goes off, and it ends up in a tree or someplace else, and it no longer flies like it should. And that's basically what happens to people a lot. I see it. They get untethered from God. And that has to do with those commitments, covenants, vows that take place. You know, we have a lot of different denominational groups within the context of the Christian community. And each of them has what I call idiosyncratic behavior and covenants. I know this, that I was spent 23 years down in Western Kentucky, and down in Western Kentucky, Presbyterians are not very, we're almost extinct down there. But there are an awful lot of Southern Baptists and Pentecostal Charismatics down there. In this area, it's Catholics and but one of the things I knew about the Southern Baptists is they don't have any drinking. Well, I'm Presbyterian. Hey, don't give your covenants to me. But one of the things that I noticed is down there, we were even in a dry county because all the Baptists and the bootleggers didn't want it. Didn't want prohibition to end. But occasionally I went to a party, and I knew a lot of Southern Baptists because having them go through the banquet, I knew a lot of people from a lot of churches and all kinds of people. And these Southern Baptists would sneak around and do their drinking, sneaking around. And I thought it was really fun. And they'd look at me kind of funny. I said, hey, I'm not Southern Baptist. I don't have that covenant agreement. God and I had never made that one. You know, you go into the Amish community or Mennonite communities or things like that, there are things that they do that have to do with their commitment before God. And if they have made these covenants and that's where they live, then they should follow them because that has to do with their relationship with God. And every one of us, I think, if I were to walk around in your life, I would say there are probably vows and things that you've made before God. And if that's the case, you need to pay attention to them because one of the things that can happen is what happens here with Samson is he starts to lose his focus in terms of who he is and what he's to be in this life. And his destiny begins to get undermined. Things begin to fall apart. Now, in terms of your life, what in terms of your Christian life, what does that have to do with? Does it have to do with marriage? Or could it have to do with business? Could it have to do with raising kids? Could have to do with how your giving is or tithing or whatever it is. But you know, you can lose focus when you start to break the covenant relationships that you have with God. And they have to do with your life. And that may not have to do with anything to do with the person that's sitting near you. But it has to do with you. And we all have these things in terms of God. Well, Samson here is losing focus. Because of he's breaking two strands of the covenant right here. He ate that honey, and now he's throwing a big alcohol party, and I know he is. And he's losing focus, and he's being undermined in terms of who he is. Now, granted, we got to go back to it. Hey, Samson would say, I didn't make the covenant with them, with God about this stuff. His parents made the covenant. But you know what? He grew up under it. I know this. I grew up under a very strong Abraham kind of personality in my father. And there are things that have to do with my life and my kids' life that have to do with my father's covenant relationships with God. And if you start really breaking that stuff down, I am telling you stuff, the blessings of my father and his relationship with God begin to break down. I didn't make those covenant relationships. He did. And he was pretty strict about informing us boys about this stuff. And Samson's parents made the covenant here, but he's breaking it. Now, I do know this, that God has no grandchildren. You know, I grew up in a Presbyterian church. Now, we are not normal as Presbyterians go. But in the Presbyterian church, one of the biggest blind spots that we had, and this is also true in Lutheran, and I think the Roman Catholic Church and some of these mainline churches, is the blind spot is that because daddy's got it, junior's got it. And it's just not true. Because God has no grandchildren. And, you know, the parents of Samson had a relationship with God. But that has to be reignited and done personally with Samson himself because God has no grandchildren. He may live under the same covenant and he may suffer because he goes against that covenant, but the true relationship that he needs to have, he does not make. Now, one of the things that happens here with Samson's parents is he entices them into breaking the covenant with him when he brings that honey home. The other thing that happens is his father went down to the woman and Samson made a feast there. So he's also enticing his father to enter in to be involved with this feast, which I am sure has a lot of alcohol around it. So he is entitled. Now, this is where evil really sits in because he entices his parents to break the covenant as well. Then he has this riddle. Verse 14. they said, put your riddle that we may hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. And they could not in 3 days tell what the riddle was. Now, now this is a seven-day bash that he's throwing here, okay? So 3 days into it, they can't come up with anything. So here's what happens. On the fourth day, verse 15, they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us here to impoverish us? And Samson's wife wept before him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You have put a riddle on to my countrymen, and you have not told me what it is. And he said to her, behold, I have not told my father nor my mother, and shall I tell you? She wept before him the 7 days that their feast lasted. And on the seventh day, he told her because she pressed him hard. Then she told the riddle to her countrymen. Now, guys, first off, these women, now take him out of stained glass, folks. This is church, but, you know, we like to tell these stories. I watched this silly thing on TV on Samson, and I said, boy, they're missing the point chances here. Men and women, ladies, if you cry, you won't tell, you don't love me, you don't love me. Or, you don't love me, slam the plates down in front of me, nang, 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 nang. Here we got, now we got Samson here with this new wife of his, and here she goes, she's crying and carrying on and nagging on him, and it says in the Bible, pressed him hard. She wears him down. What do you think, guys? Am I right? Hey? Isn't that? This is what goes on. And I know, of course, it never happened to my house. God, she weep, you hate me. I can just hear her. You don't love me anymore. You don't love me. You won't tell me these. And then she slams the door someplace. Can you see it? Yeah, it's terrible. Poor Samson, and he's an idiot anyway. He is not a strong-minded person. He is just living out of the flesh, and he ain't got the brains he was born with, I don't think. And so she's doing this for 3 days. She's wearing on him all sorts of things. And I can just see it. You know, one moment she's crying. Next moment she's slamming something someplace or yelling at him. And he comes and he gets up and he leaves. She's crying. Can't handle it. Wore him out with this stuff. I want to see this in stained glass someplace. Now, one of the things that I talked about last week is Samson is an instrument of God, not an agent. And the difference is, once again, you can be an instrument of God. You don't know what God's really doing with you, but you can be an instrument in a circumstance or a situation in somebody's life, and you can be used. Or you can be an agent. That's when you enter into somebody's life situation or circumstance, and you know I'm God's man in this time, and I have to function as that. And you're like a secret agent almost, but you're an agent. Well, he is not. He is an instrument of God. He does not show enough self-awareness or self-consciousness to function in being an agent. He just goes along, and God's probably going to use him in different settings. He's just not too bright. And his wife, newlywed, fairly new anyway, she betrays him to her countrymen. I would say right there on the spot, if I'm doing marriage, and I'm doing this wedding, I'd say, this marriage ain't going to last too long. It's running. You know, I have been to enough social events and things, and over the years, you can learn a lot just by listening or observing. And I'll catch a husband or a wife running down his or her spouse in public, and I just want to take him aside and say, you should not do that. And when I do hear it happening, I say, this marriage is in trouble, because you don't need to be doing that in front of other people. Anyway, this is one of those instances where you know this is in trouble. And one of the reasons is, first off, he's breaking covenants with God. He's kind of an arrogant person anyway. He tells his parents to go get her for me. You know, I think that's probably, if he has any kind of a relationship with God, and we will find out that later, basically that's the way he treats God too. He's losing his focus in terms of his life, destiny. And he goes and he does this riddle of thing. And his answer is the same as many men's. And so she told the riddle to her countrymen. And the men of the city, this is verse 18, said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, take it out of stained glass, folks. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. Now, what do you think he means there? Does this preach? I don't know. I've never heard anybody really talk about this in church before. But you, everybody here understand what he's saying? You got that dog whistle look. He gives the answer, and this is a man's answer, folks. You've been messing with my wife? We know exactly what he is saying here. And basically, he took as much crying and whining and carrying on as he could, and he breaks down, and he gives her the answer to the thing. Verses 19 and 20. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 men of the town and took their spoil and gave the festal garments to those who had told to the riddle. In hot anger, he went back to his father's house. And Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. Hot anger came upon this guy. And he tears the place up. Now, I want you to know that in this chapter, there is nothing of God mentioned at all, except in verse 4, when it says, his father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, that the Lord was taking all this humanity and God was going to use it. And Samson was an instrument of God's work for the people of Israel. And he had hot anger in him, and he tears the place up. Samson is an instrument, not an agent. He has no clue that God is using him. Man, this could be a soap opera. I don't know, you know, they didn't do any of this in that Bible thing that they had on TV recently. The best man gets his wife and starts an affair with her. Because he's an instrument. He's not an agent. Which are you? You know, it's better to be an agent than it is to be an instrument. That God uses you a little bit here and there. It is better to be God's agent. But you have to be in relationship with him. And you have to be under whatever it is that he has coveted with you in terms of your life. And so his life gets blown apart right there on the spot, but God is using it. But he's just an instrument. Chapter 15, verses 1 or 2. After a while, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a kid, and he said, I will go into my wife in the chamber. But her father would not allow him to go in. And her father said, I really thought you utterly hated her, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Pray take her instead. I don't see this one in stained glass anywhere. He comes back. He's calmed down some. I mean, he went away in hot anger, did all that damage, then he went home. This gal's dad's in on the whole thing. And he says, hey, why don't you just take my other daughter here? Which brings me this. When you function out of the flesh, and that is exactly what Samson is doing. When you function out of the flesh, you're going to have one anxiety, one problem, and disappointment after another. Things are just not going to go well. And all you have to do is watch some of our beautiful soap operas that we have on TV, or you'll go back and rent old Dallas and those kinds of things. And this is the truth. When you function out of the flesh, and you do not function on a spiritual level in terms of your relationship with God, you're going to have one anxiety, problem, and disappointment after another, and it will not go away. Samson is functioning out of the flesh a lot. In fact, we don't get any kind of idea that he is spiritually connected at all from what he's doing. We also know that he's basically full of himself. He's arrogant as a human being. He treats his parents like they're his slaves. He does not appeal to God or anybody else to help him out or to get involved with them in terms of relationship. And so his life just kind of bounces here and bounces there, and whatever he sees, he goes after, and that's the way it is. And he's living out of his own flesh, his own self-desire, and he is just involved in the story that God is going to work through him. He is not an agent. He's just an instrument. He does not understand who he is working for. Another thing about this story is, he lacks total peace. There's no peace in this man's life. He can't find it. He's working out of himself. The riddle gets found out because his wife is against him. His father-in-law gives her away to his best man, who probably was also a Philistine. You know, the way of the transgressor is hard. And buddy, he is a one filled with himself, functioning out of the flesh. I can see it. Father's Day comes along and Samson's at home with his dad. And I can see his dad say, you know, Samson, if you're going to be stupid, you better be tough. Because that's what he is. Some things are sweet for the moment. You know, the honey was sweet that he got out of that lion. But death is hidden in it. You know, you might even say that there was a sweetness in terms of his wedding. But you know what? Death was hidden in it. The lion and the honey, the wife from the Philistines, some things are sweet for the moment, but death is hidden in it. Verse 3 of 15. And Samson said to them, this time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them mischief. This is one of those places where Samson steps into his destiny at this point. At this point, he is going to be serving God, sort of. But he really doesn't know a lot about what he's doing. I think that Samson is kind of like a lot of men I know. Most men occasionally are self-aware, but usually it passes. That's what I see in this guy. I mean, you know, I'm not sure there's any real self-awareness in him at all. So, verses 4 and 5. So Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took torches. And he turned them tail to tail and put a torch between each pair of tails. And when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up the shocks in the standing grain as well as the olive orchards. Now, buddy, I don't know how you read these things, but I always see pictures when I see. I can see this Philistine homemaker standing at the window looking out on the farm in the backyard at the kitchen window. What the hell is that out there? Running through the rock, burning all that stuff down now. I can just see this guy screaming at her husband. What's going on out there? Anyway, here go these foxes just tearing through all this grain and stuff. Verse 6 through 8. Then Philistine said, "Who has done this?" And they said, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion." And the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. And Samson said to them, "If this is what you do, I swear I will be avenged upon you, and after that I will quit." And he smote them hip and thigh with great slaughter. And he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock of Etam. But one of the things that's going on here is, of course, as I said, there's a sweetness for a moment, but there's death that's hidden in it. And, buddy, he's living it out right here. But what he is doing is he is becoming more and more hated, and his reputation is growing in the midst of the Philistines against him. And so the conflict is escalating. Now you have to remember what it was that he was called to do, and that's back in chapter 13, where it says, "For lo, you shall conceive and bear a son, no razor shall come upon his head, for the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from birth. He shall begin to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines." Begin. I think that one of the reasons that God says he'll begin it is because there's not much to the guy, except that he was called, he has a destiny, and to be the one to begin the deliverance of Israel. But he's only going to begin it because he's a man of the flesh. He just functions out of, you know, whatever he sees of this world. And, buddy, that's what tears him up. Verses 9 to 13 in chapter 15. You have the escalating conflict. Then the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. And the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" They said, "We have come up to bind Samson to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, so I have done to them." And they said to him, "We have come down to bind you that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not fall upon me yourselves." And they said to him, "No, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will not kill you." So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. The escalating conflict is taking place here. Now, one of the things that you need to understand about Samson, he is a judge of Israel, okay? But in as a judge of Israel, he stands alone. Now, all you have to do is go back and read the story of Gideon, Gideon goes out and rounds up 30,000 men to fight the Midianites. God whittles that group down to 300, but he does not stand alone. He's not trying to do things all by himself. But Samson basically is always alone. He has no relationships with anybody that he cultivates and grows. He is arrogant, prideful, full of himself, a man who goes after the flesh, and he is an instrument of God, but he's not an agent. His battle seems to be personal. Judah is under their rule, and they come up and they do all this stuff, and they talk to him, and they bind him up. And he says, as long as you don't come on and tear on me, I won't mess with you. But he stands alone. And I think that's one of the things that you can learn from him. Do not stand alone. In your arrogance and pride or whatever it has to do with your, build relationships with people. And when you do that, you can also build a relationship with God. You notice that he stands alone. He does not even have God. The Spirit of God comes upon him three times, but he does not have God. He does not appeal to God. Verses 14 to 17. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes which were on his arms became as flax that has caught fire. And his bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of an ass and put it out of his hand and seized it. And with it he slew 1,000 men. And Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of an ass have I slain 1,000 men. When he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone out of his hand, and that place was called Ramath Lehi. Now, this part of the story is the slaughter we know about. When you hear the story of Samson, a lot of times this is the part that you hear, that and Delilah. You know, he takes this jawbone of an ass. But what we don't know is all these other things that I'm bringing up in terms of this story that are taking place. Verses 18 and 19, and he was very thirsty. And he called on the Lord and said, thou hast granted this great deliverance by the hand of thy servant, and shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? And God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi. And there came water from it, and when he drank, his spirit returned and he revived. Therefore the name of it was called Enhak Koreh. It is at Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines, 20 years. Now, even in this, it says that he called upon the Lord. He is presumptuous and brazen in his speech. Do you not think so? When he says, you know, shall I now die? Hey, God, what are you doing? He talks to God, but he almost talks to God the same way he talks to his parents, who he treats as his own personal slaves. I'm here to tell you there are consequences to actions and attitude. His personal life sucks. He treats God like his parents. Now it says his spirit is revived, but his spirit is the flesh. He was not strengthened on the inside, spiritually speaking. This was strictly the flesh. He was revived by the water. Now, I like to learn from other people's mistakes. It's always wise to do that, I think, rather than make them yourself. You know, one of the things that I've said it, I don't know how many times, is if an angel appeared in your backyard, what would be your one question that you would ask that angel? If you had one question, a big 10-foot guy with a huge sword comes up and he says, "What do you want to know?" And you get one question. My question always is, "How am I doing?" Now, I've heard other people say, "Well, is so-and-so in heaven? Or am I going to heaven?" Or other kinds. But my question always is, "How am I doing?" Because one of the things that I want to know is I understand that my salvation is secure, but I also want to be pleasing to God. And so I want to know that if I'm doing okay in terms of how I'm living my life and all that goes with it. This is a man you can learn from because you don't have to make the same kind of mistakes that he does. He had no humility whatsoever. His spirit is really comes out of the flesh that he lived in, and that's how he was thinking. Verse 20. Where are you? Verse 20? Oh, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Now, so from the ages, let's say, we don't get an age on this, but let's say that he was probably around 20 when he went down to get married to this gal. They threw the party and everything, and all this other stuff took place really fairly quickly within that context, probably within a couple of months, more than likely. The whole story between 14 and 15 probably took a couple of months, no more than that, to happen. Then it says he ruled, he was judge in Israel for 20 years. From the ages, let's say from 20 to 40, or 22 to 42, he kept the Philistines at bay, okay? He ran the country. He was the one who kind of was the leader of the Jewish people for 20 years. Now, we have 20 years of silence here before we start chapter 16. What can we build out of those 20 years? I think one of the things that you can do, it implies, if nothing else, that he had a pretty clean record for 20 years. From the ages of 20 to 40. Then chapter 16 starts. I would say 20 years he serves as God's man and representative for the people of Israel. I would say that you don't change the nature of the beast. It's still there. Flesh can lay dormant for a long time, but it never is dead. Okay? We have to remember what the guy was like when he's 20 and the way he acted. Now, he may have kept that under control for 20 years pretty much. And it does get him into the book of Hebrews in chapter 11 in that whole corridor of pictures of people who by faith did this and by faith did that. And they talk about Moses and Abraham and Gideon and some of the prophets. And guess what? Samson is mentioned there. So he served as God's representative for a period of time. And he made the hall of pictures of all the greats. So he lived in a righteous fashion, probably. But then it starts again. Here comes the flesh. Let me tell you something. You cannot get rid of it. Don't trust yourself. Samson went to Gaza. And there he saw a harlot. And he went into her. And we're going to pick up there next week. Men, you can see that it just kind of laid dormant, and suddenly it's back at him. And we're going to leave it at that tonight, and we'll watch what he does with this in a week. We need everybody's help that was willing to help to set up beds and get ready for the Women's Great Banquet number 81. These tables need to go under the balcony. And right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
And so let's pray and we'll call it a day. Lord, I ask that anything that I said tonight that is worthy of your name, that gives us a pretty good picture in terms of our own lives, that you would work it into us and help us in terms of how we live our lives. And sometimes looking at the bad examples that you have given us in the Bible helps us to work out what we shouldn't do and learn from other people's mistakes. And I ask that we would learn. In Jesus' name, amen.